Philip Levine was born in Detroit in 1928 to Russian Jewish immigrant parents and educated at Wayne University, now known as Wayne State University, the University of Iowa Writers' Workshop, and Stanford University. He is the author of 20 collections of poetry, and his honors include the Pulitzer Prize, 2 National Book Awards, 2 National Book Critics Circle Awards, and a long list of others. Philip Levine was named the 18th U.S. Poet Laureate in 2011. He now lives in Fresno, California, where he taught literature and creative writing at California State University from 1958 to 1992. Did I miss anything in that, Mr. Levine?
Yeah, you're talking to me. I'm in Brooklyn right now because I live half the year in Brooklyn.
Oh, yes, yeah. And how does that divvy up? What do you do in California, and what do you do when you're in New York?
Well, originally I taught here in New York. After I retired from Fresno State, our sons had all moved to the New York area. They're all in construction. And construction never ends in New York City. And so they came here, and they work here, and my grandkids are here. And I got a job at NYU.
Ah.
And I retired from that. I don't know how long I taught there, maybe 10, 11 years.
Okay.
And I retired from that when I turned 80, so that'd be 4 years ago.
Wow. Now, your roots go back to Detroit, though. I understand your father owned an auto parts business, and you yourself worked a night shift at Chevrolet Gear and Axle Factory, I think as early as age 14. Is that right?
It's inaccurate, but it's
okay.
Wrong.
Steer me right.
I didn't work for General Motors at age 14.
Okay.
I started working at age 14.
Ah.
But I didn't work for General Motors till I was 18. And I worked first for something called Detroit Transmission. How do you like that?
Mm.
We made transmissions for Cadillacs. It was a part of GM. And then later I worked for Chevy Gear and Axle. That's right.
Okay. Now
I left Detroit when I was 26.
Okay. Now, a lot of people think of you as a Detroit poet, even though you haven't lived there in a long time. Do you think of yourself as a Detroit poet still?
Yes, I guess I do. I mean, I carry that life with me wherever I go. I mean, I have no interest in shedding it. I welcome it, and it's certainly made a huge impression on my writing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I also think of myself as a California poet because I've written so much about the Central Valley, where I lived from 1958 to I still live there. I only taught, by the way, at Fresno State for 22 years, in spite of I started in 58 and retired in 92. I taught other places or I didn't teach at all.
Mm.
And I lived in Spain a couple of years. I do not think of myself as a Catalan. Oh, I live in Barcelona because I don't speak Catalan, but I do speak Californian and Michigan, and now I speak Brooklynese.
Wow.
I did speak Spanish, too.
Now, you're known also for an interest in Spanish poetry, and where does that come from?
Living in Spain.
Okay.
When I went to Spain, I barely knew what had gone on in poetry in Spanish. That was 1965. But while there, I met a guy who was, his name was Hardy St. Martin, and he was half, I think, Bolivian and half American, no, Honduran, and half American, and he lived in Barcelona, and he was doing a huge anthology of Spanish poetry translated into English by American poets, and he asked me if I wanted to take part, and I did, and through him I got quite an education into what had happened to 20th century Spanish poetry, and it's an incredibly rich poetry, so it was, you know, I really studied the language, and I studied the poetry, and it had a profound influence on me.
Hmm.
almost as much as Polish poetry did.
Oh, now I didn't know about that. So Polish poetry comes into yours as well?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Polish poetry in the 20th century is simply great. I mean, they got two Nobel Prizes in the, you know, from the same generation, Milosz, and
true,
the woman's name escapes me right now, but she's fabulous.
Yeah.
And then, for me, the greatest poet of the last half of that century was a man named Zbigniew Herbert, an incredible poet, difficult guy, so he didn't win big prizes.
Now,
he was an inspiration to me in how to be difficult.
And how to be difficult.
Oh, yeah. I didn't need that much help, but he was a help.
All right. And you're known mostly as a poet, but you've actually written some nonfiction books as well.
Yes. And
was that because there was something you wanted to say that just didn't give itself to poetry, or what were the roots for those?
Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay.
I wanted to write about people, because most of what you're referring to is really are essays about people who influenced me. The book, The Bread of Time, which I think contains probably the best prose I've written, is almost exclusively about people who've interested, not just interested me, but sort of been companions in my life in poetry, although they may not have known it. This spring, I gave a talk at the Library of Congress, and it was, again, about poets who influenced me, and several of them were people I knew at Wayne. And today, this very day, I located the magazines in which they appear, and I'm going to be, when I'm in Detroit, I'm going to go to the archives of Wayne, now Wayne State, and look at those old magazines from the 40s and early 50s and relive the days when we, all of us together, wrote ghastly poems, which we loved.
Now, what are your feelings about politics and artists? We know of celebrities in general taking a political stand. Now, looking back into some of the nonfiction that you've written, you did some anti-war work there, and you, I believe you signed a pledge of the Writers and Editors War Tax Protects?
Probably. I don't honestly remember. I think poetry accommodates politics very easily. Today, almost nothing is non-political. I mean, you take a drink of water and you taste some crummy chemical in it. Oh, you say, this water is crap. You've just made a political statement. There are 4,000 Republicans in town who want to drown you for saying that. You breathe the air and it, oh, God, it's toxic. Oh, you said that. My God, you probably vote for some environmentalist. Ugh. I mean, how do you get away from politics? Of course it's in poetry.
Okay.
Especially in a country like ours.
Yeah, yeah. Now, being a poet laureate, and that just concluded, didn't it? Right about now? Yeah.
Yeah.
What does that involve? What does it mean to be a poet laureate?
A lot less than you think, my dear. it means you lucked in and someone chose you. And it means your books are going to sell like mad, which they did, and you're going to get a lot of invitations to give readings and what have you. And you're also going to get a lot of invitations or requests that you're not going to want. When somebody calls up and says, you know, my oldest daughter has been writing these beautiful poems, but we don't know how to get them published, and you're the poet laureate. Could you just help us? And you have to say, no, I couldn't. I could not help you. And then somebody else says, I read a poem by a man named, is it Yeats or Yeats? And I don't understand it. Could you help me with it? And you're going to have to say, no, I haven't got time for that crap. But you work for the United States government. And the truth, I didn't.
Yeah.
I was appointed by, of course, the Library of Congress. But I didn't work for them. It's an honor. It's an honorary position, and the money that goes to it does not come from the government.
Now,
so people could despise what I was doing, but that was tough.
Now, a lot of the poet laureates seem to have chosen some kind of a project during their year. I'm not sure if that's an obligation or not, or that was just something that they wanted to do.
No, it's not an obligation.
Okay.
They would like it.
Yeah.
And I was very busy as the poet laureate, but I didn't have that kind of thing. I put my energy into other things, you know, like I went and read for labor unions, and I read for OSHA and people like that. I mean, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed meeting these working people, and that was a great pleasure for me. And, you know, they picked a guy. I was 83 on the cusp of 84, and I told them, you know, hey, you cut me a little slack here. And there were several, by the way, poet laureates before me, all the old ones.
Mm-hmm.
W.S. Merwin, who was the guy just before me, he didn't do anything either. I mean, he didn't have a project,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't have a project. I didn't want a project. I told him right from the beginning, no, thanks. I'll think about it. That's what I said. I didn't want to say no the first day.
I thought I read somewhere that you had, maybe the word is threatened, to do something with the ugliest poems.
Oh, I didn't threaten that. I said, yeah, the day that the newspapers besieged me, I said, yeah, I had this idea for a project. I'm going to write a lot of poets that I know and say, send me the ugliest poem you know. And then I put together an anthology. And in the library, and I'll get the Library of Congress to publish it. Well, of course, they said, we're not doing anything of the kind. and I said, okay, that was my project, and you shot it down.
Now, you've also received the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry in 1995 for your book called The Simple Truth. Do you consider that your best work?
No, to be honest, I don't. I don't know what I think, but I tell you the truth, I like my earlier work better.
Why is that?
Seems more daring, more imaginative, crazier, less predictable. Yeah, I think the books that I published, I'm trying to think of the name. Can you believe it? I can't think of the name of my own book. This is pathetic. I can't think of the names of my books. Well, I know they.
Well, that's
do
a good thing.
Names.
You know, if I had 20 books, I'm not sure I could name them all either.
Especially if you were my age. yeah. At any rate, no. It's a good book. It is a good book. It was certainly worth the Pulitzer because. The Pulitzer's gone. I mean, it's a good book. It was probably the best book that year.
Yeah.
But, you can write a terrible book and win the Pulitzer Prize. Because, really, it's mainly luck that gets you that prize.
Oh, I'm sure there's some quality intertwined with that luck.
Yeah, you know. One for the Rose. That's my favorite book. One for the Rose.
Mm-hmm.